Hello, everybody. Hey. I never thought I was going to be doing this when I went to broadcasting school some many years ago. But in any event, this is something very exciting for me. I just started a column with the Examiner a couple of months ago. And today I'm launching a new social networking site. And everything is taking its place within the following slogan, and that is where genealogy and spirit connect. I've spent 27 years in the genealogy field, and I think I got there because of a spiritual experience many, many years ago. And I had a reawakening of a spiritual experience a couple of 2 years ago. And so I'm getting involved in two things that I really, really, really love to do, and that's genealogy and spirituality. So here we are, and one of the things that I'm hoping that we can do through the course of the radio show and my column and the social network is try to bring more and more people into the field of genealogy and getting interested in pursuing their family history. And I know that there's another person out there, and she's with me today, and that's Megan. Megan, I'm going to mispronounce your name, so you do it for me.
It's Smolignac, and nobody can say it.
Thank you. And then you make us do it twice.
I know. Just for my enjoyment.
In any event, I think I lost my train of thought there for a second, but Megan also has a very strong interest for many, many years in trying to get people interested in genealogy, and I couldn't think of anybody better to bring on my first show than Megan. Megan, you know, we talked, I guess, about a month or so ago, and, you know, you've pretty much wowed me with, you know, the rootstelevision.com and the unclaimed persons. org, and the fact that you're the chief family historian for ancestry.com, and probably the biggest blogger out there on our Twitter there is.
I'm a hybrid. I Twitter and I Facebook and I blog. Yeah.
Yes, and I think you do it in your sleep. I'm just glad you do it because that means I don't have to. But I wanted to kind of, you know, talk a little bit this evening about the field of genealogy. I think probably of anybody out there other than maybe Dick Eastman, you probably have the pulse on the industry pretty heavy. And I'd like to get an idea of what you think and where you think the industry has come over the last few years and where you think it's going. And I want to talk a little bit, too, about what you're doing.
Okay. Now, you know, we should mention to any listeners that you have quite a background in genealogy as well, though. I mean, you ran Jewish Gen for, what, about two decades?
Something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you might have a couple ideas, too, about where genealogy has come from and where it's going as well.
Well, yeah, maybe, but, I mean, I had myself very focused into an ethnic area, and, you know, there's a lot more than one ethnicity as far as family histories are concerned. So, yeah, I do have a little bit of background.
Yeah. I would say so.
But then, you know, as far as your role, I think as the chief family historian for Ancestry, you want to give us a little bit of background on the kinds of things that you do and, you know, kind of the interesting stories that come out of, you know, looking at the backgrounds of interesting people, famous and not so famous.
Well, the title is fairly literal. I'm chief family historian. I am spokesperson for North America, but it's probably the largest share of what I do is I head up research efforts. And what happens a lot of times, I mean, people, I think that Ancestry is such a big company that they think Ancestry just goes out and researches everybody on the face of the planet, and that's not the case at all. Many of the stories that we wound up going out with have actually been triggered by a request. So, for instance, when I first took on the position of chief family historian, the very first story we had out the gate involved Al Sharpton and Strom Thurmond. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago. But that was what happened there is Ancestry was going out with its African-American historical family history collection. And they, you know, just put out some press releases and some feelers and that kind of thing. And one journalist was contacted about whether he'd like to do a story. And he said, well, maybe if you did a celebrity. And we said, sure. And so he was the one who suggested Al Sharpton. He had just previously been to James Brown funeral with him. And so, you know, we were just asked to research Reverend Sharpton's roots, but we had no idea the story that lay in wait for us. And that's the kind of thing that happens. You know, we wound up, and it took me about 4 days to sort of accidentally discover that his great-grandfather had been owned by relatives of Strom Thurmond. And that hit the news in a big way. But that wasn't something that was deliberate. I mean, a lot of times the stories we stumble across are just that, they're stumbled across. I always maintain that there's no such thing as a boring family. That if you do enough digging, there's going to be a story there.
I totally agree with you, and I think that that's the fun and really the excitement of really delving into your family history. And not so much, too, about what you find as far as who's related to who, mm-hmm. but, you know, why people are who they are. And that's really mm-hmm. the gist of the direction I've been going. I mean, I've learned a lot about, you know, who my mother was because of who her mother was and why my mother did some of the things that she did and, you know, why I am who I am. And I think that that's probably one of the most exciting parts of getting involved in genealogy if you allow yourself to go past the names and the dates and the places.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I believe that traits get passed down, character traits, as well as, you know, the genetic and so forth. You know, there's different branches in my family. There's one branch from my Shields branch. I think I got my vagabond qualities. I used to fancy I was the first world traveler in my family, and I realized I was the sixth generation in that branch. Yeah, and there's another branch of late bloomers. You know, not that we're useless, but we tend to hit our stride about the age of 40. And you just notice those particular patterns. It may be that you get musical talent, that kind of thing. There's traits, I think, that get passed down along with the hardcore genetic traits as well.
I agree with you there wholeheartedly. So I have a request.
Okay.
I would like to know a little bit more about the Susan Boyle, who is pretty much taken the world by storm. You know, I did an article on her the other day. I just am mesmerized with how interesting the world has embraced her.
Yeah.
And how they've taken, supported her after that interesting interview that they did with her and Simon Cowell and what came out. All I know is that her mother's name is Bridget. But she would be an interesting character to research.
Now you're telling me something I don't know because I just got back from a trip about midnight last night. Now I watched the video of her. I know exactly who you're talking about, and I was captivated by everybody else. But what's the family history side of this?
I'd like to know more.
Ah, okay.
I'm putting in a request. Let's do our history.
She's the first one in her family with that musical talent. It was inevitable.
You know, I don't know if she was. I can't remember if that's the case or not.
Mm-hmm.
But she would be an interesting one to learn a little bit more about. We do know that she was born with learning disabilities, and but I think those were more birth the facts during the birth process rather than hereditary.
Mm.
So in any event. Going back to you, Reach Television.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about what brought that into being.
Well, you're talking to half of Roots Television right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think we're some sort of big corporation, and it's myself and my friend Marcy Brown, who was the executive producer of the PBS Ancestor series. So we're just two chicks in a channel. And what happened is several years ago, We actually we had a deal to do a genealogy television series with a major cable outlet. I'm not going to name names, but you would all, you know, anybody listening would recognize it. And everything was going swimmingly, and we were trying to be very flexible and give them everything they wanted until they looked at me in all seriousness and said, "Oh, one more thing. Just make sure this show has no history in it."
Huh.
Yes, and that was a bit of a deal breaker there. And so, you know, once that situation ended, we thought, well, what do we do now? And we could have kept on just knocking on doors and so forth, but this was just about the time when people were starting to put video online, and so we thought, well, why don't we just be a pioneer? And so we created Roots Television, because we never understood, you know how there's HGTV, for example, for people who are into home and gardening and stuff. We never understood, with genealogy being so darn popular, why there wasn't an equivalent for the family history world. And so we said, okay, well, we'll do that, but we'll just do it online. And so that's how Roots Television was born. It was just the two of us figuring it out a step at a time. So
where do you get your material?
It's a mishmash. We're constantly looking for material. We occasionally license it. We grow a lot of our own material because Marcy is an outstanding producer. I have to say, our original content, our original programming, is some of my favorites. So you may have seen some of our shows like DNA Stories or Unclaimed Persons or Down Under, which, of course, are cemetery tales and that kind of thing. And a lot of even our one-offs, like having to do with Annie Moore, the first immigrant through Ellis Island, more recently the Haley family, the DNA story about finding their Scottish cousins and so forth, those are all things that we produce ourselves.
Amazing. So is that why you travel around so much?
That's one of the reasons. I mean, whenever I'm someplace, for example, I'll be heading to New Hampshire this week for the NERC conference, and I will have my camcorder with me, and Dick Eastman and I will round up some interviews. Whenever I hit a conference, I'm there with a camcorder, and I'm going to snag some interviews with folks. And if Dick is there, I'll ask him to do that. If not, I will pinch it and do it, and you get the B team. But, yeah, just, you know, trying to get anything that's remotely genealogically related. We try to find the best that's out there. And we're kind of fussy. I mean, you can go to YouTube, for example, and, you know, just search on genealogy, and you'll find a gazillion videos, but many of them are not worth your time. So, you know, we try to keep the quality high.
And if people have videos, do you accept them from individuals?
Okay.
Or?
Yeah, we have.
So you do.
Yeah, if you go on the top of Roots Television, there's some tabs, and one of them is called Roots Tube, and it's our version of YouTube, and you can upload your own videos there, and we'll pop them in and, you know, write the description and so forth. Now, I will tell you what we tend to do is we put up new content on Tuesdays. We call it New Roots Tuesdays. So Tuesdays is when we put up the new videos. So if you upload something, say, on a Thursday, you probably wouldn't see it until that following Tuesday. And we like to do that just so people, you can watch whatever you want, whenever you want, which is nice. And, oh, by the way, it's free. But there's still, we find when it comes to, quote-unquote, television viewing, people like to have a certain sense of expectations. They want to know when there's going to be something new. And so we try to add that sort of regular feature. And so every Tuesday is when you're going to find all the latest stuff.
And is there the same process of, like, YouTube, where people can put some videos into their websites?
Oh, where they can embed it, like, into their blogs and that kind
yes.
of thing?
Yes.
Yeah. If you click on it, yeah. Just if you look on the bottom of the videos, you know, there's the usual little buttons where you can click. Just recently, and this actually took a lot of work, but we upgraded the platform so that you can now view the videos in full screen. In fact, I hook it up to my television set sometimes and watch Roots Television on a conventional television set. But, yeah, you just click on the bottom and it operates very much like YouTube, and you can do pretty much the same sort of things.
That's great. I think I might add some of that to my site. You never know.
Yeah.
And you did mention it's free, and the URL is www.rootstelevision.com, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so that's number two. And I think the one that kind of steals my heart a little bit is your Unclaimed Persons .org.
Wow, yeah.
And unfortunately, I've been too busy trying to get all my stuff together that I really haven't had time to participate as a volunteer, but I intend to. But why don't you explain what that's all about?
Yeah, that's actually, that was almost an accident. Well, one thing I should tell you, for about the last decade, actually, I've been working with the U.S. Army. I'm under contract with the Army to locate the families of soldiers who are still unaccounted for, mostly from Korea, but I also do World War I, World War II, and Southeast Asia cases. And because of that, you know, a decade of flexing that particular sort of genealogical muscle, I'm very good at finding the living, as well as finding those who've been, you know, deceased for 200 years. And so a few years ago, I tripped across a newspaper article talking about this problem that it's one of those quiet epidemics. Coroner's offices across the country, across the world actually, but particularly here in the United States, have this situation where they have tons of bodies that they're not John and Jane Doe's. Their identities are known, but sadly, there's nobody to claim them. So they are literally unclaimed persons. And I read an article about a particular office that was having this problem, and it made me realize, hey, the same thing I do for the Army would work here as well. And so I actually cold called a couple of coroner's offices and told them about my background with the Army and so forth. And one of them invited me to come visit, and I went to pick up one case, and I wound up going home with five. And then I started doing this for other coroner's offices. And then what happened is Marcy and I decided to do a show about this for Roots Television. And so we made an episode about a pair of cases I did, one for Lackawanna County in Pennsylvania and one for San Bernardino County in California. And that show first aired almost a year ago. I think it was last May. And what happened then when that show went out on Roots Television is we got inundated with emails from genealogists who said, oh, I want to help. I want to do that too. And as I mentioned earlier, we're a two-person company. It's all we can do to keep Roots Television going. And we didn't know, okay, how can we manage this and how can we keep from becoming a bottleneck and so forth. Well, I had started playing with Facebook a few months prior to this, and I knew that they had group functionality there. So I just had this notion, well, I'll just put up a group on Facebook. It'll be a little bit quicker than creating a website and all that. So I did that. And it just exploded. It took on its own. Yeah. Now, we now do have a website. It's unclaimedpersons.org, and you can go there and learn all about what we do. We are still on Facebook. We just last week migrated to a private environment because we noticed that some of the chit-chat about some of our decedents was it was slipping out into Google. And some of the decedents, their stories are a little colorful, and we thought we should probably be a little more discreet with their information. And so we've migrated. We're still on Facebook, but if you belong to Facebook, you can just search on Unclaimed Persons Private and join us in our new environment. But in our public environment, we have, I believe, close to 600 volunteers. And having just moved to the private environment last week, you have to request an invitation. Essentially, I think we're up to about 175 last I checked, something like that in the first week. So, and I should know the count. We've solved 60 some odd cases. I don't know the exact number right now, but it's 60 some odd, and that's since we launched sometime last June.
Wow, so that's been less than a year.
Yeah, and it's the pace is accelerating because to a certain extent it's been a matter of proving ourselves to the different coroner's offices, because you can imagine if you're a coroner, you know, you have, first off, you have access to a lot of policing information, and second, you're going to be concerned about discretion. I mean, our number one rule is never, ever, ever make contact with a family member or an associate. You give that information, you know, we put in a report that we give to the coroner. The coroner always, always makes the contact. We don't do that. So you can see where some would be a little bit reticent about how we operated and how discreet we were and that kind of thing. So it's a little bit of a earn the right situation to work with these folks. But we work with San Bernardino and Los Angeles and San Diego and Hillsborough, which is Tampa, Florida. We work with Travis County in Texas. We work with Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia. And at this point, actually, that's where we're going to stay for a little bit just because of the volume of cases we've been getting.
That is truly amazing. So if you wanted to volunteer, mm-hmm. as I have, and I wanted to become active in a case, how does that work?
Well, first off, you have now, because we just went into the private environment, you do have to go, you have to join Facebook if you don't belong, okay? But you can always find the basics at unclaimedpersons.org. But if you just want to jump in, just go to Facebook, and these days most genealogists do belong to in Facebook. Search in the upper right-hand side corner. There's a little box there. Search on Unclaimed Persons Private. When you go in there, just request to access, and one of our administrators will give you access usually within seconds kind of thing. And then once you're in, you want to read the guidelines just so, you know, we need to make sure nobody contacts family members and that kind of thing. And then you'll just see cases posted, and you can jump in on any case. What we notice people tend to do is they kind of monitor the situation for a bit. But some people jump right in the first day they come in. And what you can do is it's kind of a build on each other's research sort of situation. There's a board, a discussion board for each individual case. And we have actually sort of a structure involving administrators and managers. So there's somebody overseeing each case. And people just put the little bits and pieces. Oh, I found the family in the 1930 census. Oh, and I found this obituary. This might be Goodfellow's aunt and that kind of thing. And people build on each other's clues. Maybe because we have so many members, we have people in different locations, so somebody might make a run to the local library, the courthouse, and find us another clue. When we need to, we order Social Security applications, that kind of thing. And, you know, meanwhile, the administrator's kind of keeping an eye on it, and then when it gets close, the administrator puts together a bit of a report, which we then submit to the coroner's office, and then we put it into pending status, and once we hear back from the coroner, it goes into solved status. So, and that's where we've gone through that routine, like I said, over 60 times so far.
And can I ask how many unsolved cases there might be? I know that, you know, no matter, the police have tons of them, so.
Yeah. I'm not sure. The reason I'm not sure is because sometimes it takes quite a while for the coroners to report back to us, okay? But to give you some sense, we just put up our most recent case that we posted was number 100. And many of the cases are fairly recent ones. So if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say maybe, you know, there's honestly only been like maybe four or five where we just couldn't find any kind of relative. Now, when we find a relative, whether that relative chooses to cooperate or not is another issue. But there's only been four or five where we just couldn't get any traction. And maybe all told, 15 or 20 where we're kind of still waiting. The jury's still out to hear what the status is. The others would be, current cases that we're still working. And we're pretty stubborn. We'll work a case a good long time before we give up on it.
Well, just interesting because I think some of my future guests may be very, very helpful maybe in helping solve some of these tougher ones. So we might want to talk about that sometime.
Okay.
You never know. In any event, we're going to continue talking a little bit, but I want to give some call-in numbers if anybody wants to just call in and ask Megan or I any questions. We have a toll-free number, which is 888-815-9756, and there are some regular numbers, 530-876-3222 and 530-876-9916. So we will start taking calls if you're out there and want to talk. And if not, we understand that, too. I don't normally call in to radio shows myself, but in any event. About what you've seen, I mean, obviously the whole social networking concept has totally... changed in the last couple of years. I mean, I was involved in probably one of the first social networks out there, and I'm going to tell you, just learning all the new stuff has been a trip. Really, totally been a real trip. So how do you see, the genealogy world I see it taking grasp on Facebook, as you mentioned earlier. Yeah. And, I know that there's, we've got Ancestry.com, there's MyHeritage.com, there's Genie.com, there's MyFamily.com, and all social networks that are, geared towards helping with research and sharing of information.
Yeah, it's gone really nuts. And you can almost, it's interesting to watch the patterns. I believe it was actually Unclaimed Persons that had a lot to do with a bunch of genealogists coming onto Facebook last year because there were the first, let's say, a few dozen of us kind of poking our heads around going, what is this Facebook thing? And then when I decided to put the Clean Persons thing there, all of a sudden they were pouring in. And the same phenomenon is now happening with Twitter. If anybody's not on Twitter, I mean, just 2 months ago, there were hardly any genealogists there, and now there's just tons of us, and there's new ones every single day. And we're very much in that poking our nose around stage, trying to figure out what the heck we can use this for, and whether it's advantageous. One big difference I noticed between Twitter and Facebook is that Twitter is just really, really global. I mean, some of my Slovak cousins are finding me on Facebook, but with Twitter, it's really fun because this year I've already spoken, for example, in New Zealand and England and British Columbia, and I have all these Twitter folks that I've, you know, tweeps, I guess we're supposed to call them. This is a new language I have to master. And, you know, folks that I've had the opportunity to meet this year literally around the globe, and that's really fun. That's really a cool aspect of it. And, you know, what's next? I mean, I think it's hard to say. I think what we're going to see probably is a change in the whole speaking world, and we're seeing the baby stages of that. You're seeing folks like Dick Eastman and Bo Scarborough experimenting with remote lecturing. So, for instance, when Dick and I were in at the Who Do You Think You Are live event in London back in February, while we were there, he did a lecture to the folks at the Family History Expo in St. George. And I know this weekend, when we're both going to be in New England and New Hampshire at the conference, he's going to be doing a couple of lectures on Saturday to Saskatchewan. And I know Bo is doing the same sort of thing, where he's offered a handful of lectures free to kind of work out the technological kinks. So I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that kind of thing, the remote lecturing. And very much like blogging and Facebook and Twitter and stuff, that opens things up. I mean, when it comes to speaking, traditionally it's been, you know, a fairly narrow group of people who travel the country and speak. But once the technology is there to do webinars and so forth, you know, there's going to be a lot more people offering genealogical topics and so forth, just like the blogs. The number of blogs has just absolutely exploded. I think it was about 3 years ago, I know Joe Biney, who does deathindexes.com, and Randy Siever and I all started the same time, April, 3 years ago. And same sort of phenomenon. There weren't too many of us around. We were just kind of going, well, I'm just kind of kicking the tires, trying to figure it all out. And now there's well over 1,000 genealogical blogs and growing all the time. It's just, you just see exponential growth in every little aspect.
It really is amazing. And I mean, I had not ever ventured into the blogging world. And I don't really call writing this article for this column for the Examiner basically blogging. But, you know, one of the things that I've set up on my social network is a system where people can create their own blogs and offer RSS feeds. So if you want to join the genealogy blogging world, feel free to use www.susaneking.com. You never know. It's kind of an interesting thing. And this whole, you know, concept of being able to share, you know, information from one social network to the other has really fascinated me. And when I put my new site together, you know, I've actually put it together 3 times. I didn't like the first 2 platforms I chose. So I've learned a lot about putting together social networks over the last 3 months, because I've done about one a month here. I finally have found the platform that I really like. And, you know, but I really, really wanted, and what the thing that was most important to me was the ability for people to, you know, use the site, and if they find something of interest, or, you know, that they can share it anywhere else, either through a blog, through Facebook, through Twitter, MySpace, Reddit, Dig It, all of those places. So it's
I have it set up so if I post to my blog, it goes into my Twitter, and then that feeds it into my Facebook. But it doesn't always work. That's the way it's supposed to go.
Right. Well, I haven't figured out how all of that works. I found Tweeter on Facebook. So I'm still learning, I think, along with everybody else. And I think this whole Twitter thing really came to the forefront, I think, in the last week, too, while maybe you were gone, with Larry King getting involved and Oprah Winfrey and this whole big...
Well, I was already jumping up with, Ellen came in about a month ago, and of course, Kutcher has been in for a while, and then, yeah, he went and challenged CNN. So, yes, once Oprah came in, forget it. That's why it kept on choking today, and I think that's the Oprah effect right there. I think they're just overwhelmed with traffic.
Right. And for people who are not involved in this, how do you suggest they get started? I mean, what would be your way? I mean, I just kind of jumped into everything quickly. And
that's exactly what I do. I just jump in and get my hands dirty. The nice thing, I mean, it sounds like a foreign language. You know, we're using words, Twitter and Facebook and Yugma and Dimdim and, things that would have made no sense 6 months ago and stuff. But most of them are very user-friendly, and you just jump in and start doing it. For myself, it works best if I have an application. So, I never would have troubled how to run a group on Facebook unless I had the need to do something like the unclaimed person thing. But once I have an idea in mind, then it's very easy to master the fundamentals. And all these tools are user-friendly.
Well, it certainly has... I think changed the industry. I mean, we thought, Ancestry and all of the other major sites had made some major changes over the last, 10 years maybe. But this, what's going on now in the last 2 years really is really a whole new phenomenon, in just total, communications.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, too, when finally, genealogy comes to television in America, whether we get the explosion effect that they've had in other countries like England, because we could actually be in the we ain't seen nothing yet stage when it comes to genealogy. We'll have to see.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, we may be regarded as the pioneers. Millions of us were pioneering first.
So, really, you think that that's probably a whole new facet. What about, the family trees and the sharing and we've got the, genie.com that came on the market recently that I have a cousin that just loves it. And, are a lot of connections being made that I haven't had time to follow up on.
Exactly. That's exactly where I am. I have, all my stuff, as you would expect, on Ancestry.com, and I just get all these emails from people who are probably like six cousins once removed. And it's hard to keep up with everybody.
But the trend, as I see that, and what I guess bothers me a little bit and the whole genealogical process is, genealogy to me is two things. One, it is connecting with mm-hmm. other family members.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also learning more about yourself and your family and really studying and finding, and digging through those records. You've got some that are record-based and you've got some that are connected-based.
Right.
And, people are jumping into the genealogy from Facebook without really knowing what they're really doing. And that concerns me a little bit.
There's always going to be ancestor collectors, the ones that just go for numbers, that they think the name of the game is how many people are in their database. That element's always been here, at least since the advent of software. Made it a lot easier in the paper pencil days, that kind of thing. But I don't know. To me, it's a little bit like DNA. I predicted several years ago that people would start coming into genealogy through the genetic gate. In other words, they get a DNA kit for Christmas or something like that, and then the slippery slope phenomenon would kick in. They'd find out something interesting, and then they'd want to start learning about their roots, and then they'd start learning the basics about the census records and the military records and so forth. And, obviously that's not going to happen. That has been happening, but, that's not going to happen with every single person. But let's say television does cause genealogy to explode here in the States. There's going to be an influx of ancestor collectors, but there's also going to be an influx of people who are serious about finding about their roots, and it's they just have a learning curve. But they're lucky that they waited because there's so many more tools out there and they can learn so much faster, and they can find so much faster. You and I have been doing genealogy since the dark ages where, you know, when you took your baby steps, you were probably waiting a few months until you discovered something new, something you didn't know before. Yeah. And now it would be a pretty rare individual who couldn't jump online and find something they didn't know about their family in the first hour or so of searching, you know. So, you know, we can't control, we can't force everybody to maintain a certain set of standards, but, you know, a good healthy percentage of the people who come in are going to get just as addicted as we are and they'll become serious researchers as well, and we'll have more serious playmates. So I think, to me, I'm big on the more the merrier. I'd love to see as many people, you know, ultimately, supposedly we are all cousins, we are all related, so I want as many playmates as I can find.
There you go. And, you know, there was, I was, I had a thought and it just escaped me about that whole subject matter. And
Oh, sorry, I'm rambling too much there.
No, that's okay.
Wind me up, Susan, I get going.
I think we're both that way. I've got tape across my mouth so I don't interrupt you. Keep pulling it off. I've been known to do that a little bit, and I have been accused of doing that. So I wanted to make sure that I don't step step in that direction. In that case, I will think of it. I think again. Let me give you some numbers if anybody is out there and listening. Also, want you to know, and Megan, for your purposes too, that this is being recorded and will be available as a podcast on BBS Radio, and I haven't decided if I'm going to carry them either myself. This is all very, very, very new. To the early days of genealogy, you started about when I did back in, 87 or later than that?
I started before Roots even came out. I started as a youngster.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I started in the sixth grade.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I've been at it for a while.
So what got you interested in that young age? I didn't get involved till I was 37.
It was a homework assignment for me.
Okay.
So, yeah, we had to go home and find out where our surname was from, and I was actually misinformed by my dad and told that I was from Russia, then the Soviet Union. And we went back the next day, and the teacher had a big old world map, and we had to put our names on these slips of paper in our country of origin. And I felt so sorry for all my classmates because they were all crowded around the British Isles, and I had the whole of the Soviet Union to myself. I thought that was pretty cool. So, you know, that's when I started doing the save up your allowance to buy the next death certificate routine, and I've just been doing it ever since.
How many people do you think started at that age? And where in the world were you in school that you did a project like that? I mean, I think they should be doing this in schools all over the world.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that they're not.
I was an Army brat. I happened to be living in Maryland at the time, in the suburbs of D.C., Washington, D.C., and I had no idea why the teacher had us do it, but she did. So it's her fault.
It's all her fault.
Yeah. So her name was Mrs. Berkowitz. I still remember Mrs. Berkowitz.
Oh, isn't that funny? Because my guest next week is Rita Berkowitz. And that is funny.
Yeah. Ask her if she has any relatives in her own suburbs. Yeah.
I will. Wouldn't that be interesting? Does she have an accent?
There, yeah.
I think what I was going to say where I got my train of thought just got a little off base was about this addiction.
Yeah,
and I don't know what addiction is worse these days, whether it's the genealogy addiction, the Facebook addiction, the Twittering addiction. I think you read it. I read all the time that Facebook has turned gray, and I think a lot of people have not gotten involved in Facebook because they thought it was for the kids. And I have a 18-year-old niece who's been involved in Facebook for a while.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, she's become my friend, but she will not be her father's friend. So,
It was a niece who introduced me, actually several years back, but I didn't get it quite at first. But then when I joined, Yeah, I think a couple of my nieces and nephews were a little bit cranky about the parentage thing, yeah. But they've gotten over it now.
Well, one of the things that I have found is it definitely lets you show your true colors. You know, I've found that my life is, I guess, very rich because, you know, I have friends in all kinds of places, from the music world mm-hmm. to the genealogy world to the sailing world to people I went to high school with to, you know, just the spiritual world. It's just a very eclectic collection of people that, you know, I think is just very, very interesting suddenly, you know, I was with the, you know, group of musicians that I've had to give up my Monday nights to do this show, but I've started finding all these pictures of me, you know, playing around town.
Yes.
That, you know, I don't think I would have put anywhere if it was up to me.
That's one thing I learned when I got on Facebook. You know, when you're speaking, you're really kind of oblivious to people taking your photos. And apparently for the last decade, a lot of photos have been taken of me. And some of them are starting to emerge on Facebook. Yeah, that's, and it is strange. It's sort of a way to excavate your own past. I mean, like way back in the dark ages, I ran a World Bank project in India. And sure enough, some friends of mine from India found me. And, you know, just people from your distant past, like you mentioned, high school and all that kind of thing. So it's really strange to have these little voices from your past emerge, but it's kind of interesting, things you'd completely forgotten, or at least in my case I have.
Well, and not only is it interesting, it just brings you closer together. I mean, I know that I've got some of my first cousins who I probably, you know, since they left New Orleans umpteen years ago that, you know, I don't get to see very often. And, you know, just to be able to see what they're really up to, even though you know, we don't have constant communications. It really does broaden the scope of you know, who people really are. And you know, I think we went through a phase of being very protective of our privacy and who we were. And you know, the Facebook and pretty much any of the social networkings is really a new expose, so to speak, of life. And it's really no different than what you know, genealogy is. When you start digging for our roots, is an expose of life. What? And when you get down to the nitty gritty, which is you know, the area of main interest to me these days, is you know, the fact that we're pretty much all the same, no matter what our ethnic background, our nationality, our religion, our color, is that we all have a family history, and it all has some very interesting things, and it's all, you know, what we as human beings are made of. And, you know, when you really look at, you know, understanding other people's genealogies and other people's family history, and really knowing that it's almost the same, it's just, you know, maybe happened in different ways slightly, that I think it really, that's where the spirituality comes into me, for me, is that, you know, we're all here, and we're all living a life, and the people that came before us lived their lives, and they did what they had to do based on their socioeconomic conditions, and whatever strengths they had, we picked up. Whatever bad traits they had, we picked up. And some we passed on, some we didn't pass on. And, you know, it's a very, very interesting look at the way, you know, the way we, you know, should see each other. And it's a fascinating study. And I'm as interested as you are in other people's genealogies as I am my own.
Yeah.
Because you can really learn so much about someone. You know, and I've been doing a little bit in my column, Megan. I did you know, it was a kind of a silly thing because, you know, we get these little editorial notes and it says, you know, well, Monday is National Cheerleaders.
Right.
Mm-hmm. An article, you know. Mm-hmm. So, all right, you know, I said, I'll play. And so I went on and, you know, I said, now, how do you get cheerleading in genealogy? So I had a little bit of fun, and I actually went in and found a little bit about the, you know, the first cheerleader in Minneapolis and where they came from, and did his own genealogy, and it was really kind of an interesting piece, very different, but you know, he turned out to be a doctor.
Uh-huh.
He was killed in an automobile accident, and he had two daughters. I mean, you start learning about things, and they become a little bit more than just a picture on a piece of paper somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I mean, for example, the Down Under show we do on Roots Television, we just swoop into any cemetery and pick a tombstone, and we essentially bring that person back to life. We just find the story under the stone. It's the same concept. And you're right. I mean, it seems every person is fascinating, you know? It's just, you're just curious to know what their story was. They're boiled down to a couple of words on a piece of stone or in an article or, you know, in some museum or something, but it's fascinating to learn what the real person was like.
I agree with you. And I mean, I don't know why there's some of us that are really fascinated with that, and then, you know, there are some that don't quite understand why we are so fascinated with dead people. But, you know, I think we learn from it, personally.
Yeah.
You know, I just quickly wrote my article for today, which was part of a major story on the recession and the depression. And, yeah, I was thinking about it a little bit, and I realized that, you know, yeah, the stories that came out of, you know, from our families during the Depression,
mm-hmm.
Are probably the lessons that we needed to learn to get through the recession. And, you know, the article was, you know, very different, I guess, in the way to approach it. But, you know, maybe we need to start telling the stories of how we're getting through this recession so that it can be passed on generationally when the next major issue crops up, and that we learn from our ancestors' strengths and mistakes, and we learn from each other. That's what, you know, it's fascinating. It's all about people, in my opinion, and even though they're dead, it's really all about people.
Yeah, like you said, the sense of connection. We were talking earlier about social networking and all that. I often wonder what it's going to be like for our descendants 100 years from now, because with things like Facebook and Twitter, look how much information all of us are going to be leaving behind, digital photos and all that kind of stuff. You know, many of us today count ourselves lucky if we have a single photo of a set of great-grandparents. But think of the overload our descendants are going to encounter. And how do you let them know what mattered most to you out of this pile of information where you're Twittering, you know, what you're having for breakfast? How do you know what mattered, you know?
Well, we definitely are sharing a lot more of our lives today than I think has ever been shared in the past. And, how is this going to be central? I mean, is it going to... How do you store it? I mean, you know, how much of it is going to be lost by some, catastrophic something? I know I have a lot of information I've lost off my hard drives over the years.
Yeah.
You know, that for whatever reason. But in any event, so what's next on your list of projects, my friend?
Keep on keeping on. I'm still speaking. I'm still working with the Army. I'm still doing my stuff for Ancestry. I'm still doing new stuff for Roots Television. So I'm still wearing all the same hats as always. What the next big thing or next surprising thing? You know, actually the biggest surprises in my career have always been the ones that just fell out of the clear blue sky. I usually don't know they're coming. you know, the most fun stories I've been a part of. And I noticed for me, the pattern is Friday afternoons. I get interesting phone calls on Friday afternoons. So call me one Friday and I'll let you know what's going on.
We don't have to call you. You let us know no matter what.
Well, when I find something interesting, you know, I try to share it. I mean, I thought it was fun about the Haleys with the DNA to find the oral tradition confirmed through science. That's a fun story. To find the true story of Annie Moore, you know, the first immigrant through Ellis Island. Those are people. I have an article that just came out in Ancestry magazine about Philip Reed, who's the former slave, who basically is responsible for putting the Statue of Freedom on the top of the U.S. Capitol. And there's people whose stories deserve to be told, you know, who should be remembered. And I like to find those stories and kind of put them out there.
You know, and I agree. And I, you know, a lot of times people get involved in genealogy just to find their own families.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's a whole lot more to that than that. And I've really started to enjoy that. I mean, I've been involved in helping people, you know, do their own genealogies for years, mm-hmm. and I intend to stay involved in that because that's really a passion of mine. But it's almost as interesting to study other people's genealogies as it is mm-hmm. to do your own.
Yeah,
it's very fascinating. Megan, I thank you so much. Nobody called in, but that's okay. I enjoyed every minute of it and learning all about what you're doing. I just want to let everybody know that next week, Rita Strauss-Berkowitz is going to be my guest. She calls herself a spirit artist. We're going in delving into some different areas, but she is a medium. And very interestingly, and I did an article on her a couple weeks ago, that when she receives, or spirit comes to present themselves to one of her clients, she actually can not only see them, but she can draw them. And it's pretty fascinating. I'm very interested because I have a mother that was adopted, and I am stuck. I have been stuck for 27 years. Mm-hmm. So I may, you know, find it in my, to see if I can't get a picture of what my grandmother might have looked like at some point if she would come and visit me. You never know. It may help me find out a little bit more about where my mother came from. Her records were unsealed by the courts, and her mother had a false name, and the father was not listed.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother was tested with, you know, DNA tested for mtDNA with Family Tree DNA when we first launched that 10 years ago, and we've got a lot of connections, but nobody will admit to the skeleton in the closet. Nobody will admit to the fact that there was somebody in their family that had a child out of wedlock, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. So here I am, and I can't get past my mother. Can you believe it?
Murphy's Law. I mean, isn't that the story of most, you know, professional genealogists, I think? We have a very early brick wall.
Yep. Well, my brick wall has been here for 27 years, and I intend to break it down here real soon using some different techniques, I think, because nothing else has worked. In any event, for all of those who did join us tonight, I want to thank you. It's been really kind of fun for me. This is really the first show of where genealogy and spirit connect. I'm Susan King, and Megan, last name, has been my guest.